Genesis. You don't got to go very far. Genesis chapter 18. When I heard that Pastor was going to Belgium and I was praying about some things about what the Lord would have me to preach today, I thought a lot about, you know, different topics and studied a lot of different things out and spent a good amount of time this week thinking about a message for today and, you know, jumping from topic to topic, you know, just for whatever reason, you know, reading some things, studying some things, nothing really stuck. I mean, they were all good topics, but it just didn't feel right. Didn't feel like what the Lord wanted me to provide today. So, you know, I jumped around, spent hours and hours and hours of studying things and reading things out, and, you know, then it finally hit me. I'm like, today's Mother's Day. And, you know, me and my wife, we've made plans, you know, about, for weeks about what we were going to do today, but I never put two and two together. You know, I didn't ever put two and two together that Pastor was going to be gone today. And so once it finally, that realization came to me this week, in the middle of the week, you know, finally the Lord provided me with some material here. And you know, things got rolling from there, and here we are today. And so with that being said, so I thought to myself, well, it's Mother's Day. You know, what better way to honor a mother than to talk about some fathers of the Bible? I'm kidding. Last year, I think, I taught some Sunday school. I taught a Sunday school lesson. It was either last year or the year before. I taught a Sunday school lesson on Mother's Day about Abraham and the father of many nations and how he fathered Isaac and how that was just the best thing in the world that ever happened to him and all that. And just, it was unbeknownst to me. So I just figured today we might as well just try to repeat that magic, right? Try to get things going, talk about some fathers in the Bible, you know? Maybe Moses today, you know, how about that? How he was a father figure that led the Israelites 40 years in the desert, or maybe David, you know, how he mentored Solomon to be his replacement. Man, if the feminists around the world could hear me today, man, I'd be canceled in a heartbeat, right? How dare you, you know? Oh no, I'm canceled. I got to go back to doing what I normally do, back to real life. But all joking aside, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers here today. Mother's Day is a special day. Now, although the holiday itself might not be biblical, but it is a biblical principle to give honor and bring honor and glory to your mother, okay? Proverbs 31:28 says, "Her child arise and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praiseth her." Sorry. Now, I couldn't imagine, you know, I know that there's some people here in America that do, I couldn't imagine growing up without a mother. I couldn't imagine growing up without a godly mother to that extent. All the things, you know, suppers would have probably got old, right, Dad? Things, you know, wouldn't have got done that Mom normally got done. And so we have a lot of great examples of mothers in the Bible. You know, what makes a good mother? What are some great characteristics of a good mother? You know, but the list can go on and on about mothers and examples in the Bible about what we have here. But for the sake of time today, I would just like to take a moment to acknowledge a few of these women, okay? And the reason why I picked these few women is because I believe that these women, they share a common trait. And I believe that this trait is the most important trait any mother or any father could ever possess, okay? I think this trait in particular is one of the most influential and best traits that any mother or father could have, okay? And so with that being said, I'd like to start with Sarah in the Bible. Turn, if you would, like I said, to Genesis chapter 18. We're going to pick up in verse 1. A little backstory on Sarah, just so we can get see some of her characteristics, who she was as a person, what she was as a mother, who she was. Abraham and Sarah were pretty well-off people, okay? They had servants. They had many livestock, they had sheep, they had all sorts of things going on. They had a busy homestead, right? They had a lot of things going on, a lot of servants, a lot of people to take care of, a lot of mouths to feed. Okay, they were pretty well off, okay? But Sarah, you know, she had many maidens to look after. You know, she wasn't just sitting around, lounging around, you know, getting fed grapes, you know, by these maidens. She was taking care of, making sure things got done, right? Abraham was able to raise a militia out of these servants, right? He couldn't have done that without Sarah. Okay, and the work that she put in, making sure that her house was well taken care of, okay? And Genesis chapter 12, God called Abram away from the land where they both grew up, right? God called Abraham to sojourn in a land that was far away from him, right? And so we can look at that and we can see that Sarah faithfully followed Abraham, right? And the Bible doesn't say that she ever complained about it. Like, imagine Sarah, hey, Abram's coming to her, to you and saying, hey, we're going to go, the Lord told me to go to this land, and this is where we're going to be from now on. But what about all the people we grew up with? What about all our families here, you know? She never complained once. She faithfully followed Abraham in God's calling for Abraham. That's sacrifice, right? Sarah knew what a true sacrifice was, right? And she honored Abraham in that calling. Now, picking up here in Genesis chapter 18 and verse 1, it says, and the Lord appeared unto him in the plains of Mamre, and he sat in the tent door in the heat of day, that being Abraham. And he lifted his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door and bowed himself toward the ground and said, my Lord, if now I have found favor in thy sight, pass not away, I pray thee, from thy servant. Let a little water, I pray you, be fetched, and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. And I will fetch a morsel of bread and comfort ye your hearts. After that ye shall pass on, for therefore are ye come to the servant? And they said, so do as thou hast said. And Abraham hastened into the tent unto Sarah and said, make ready quickly three measures of fine meal. Knead it and make it. Make cakes upon the hearth. Okay, so from this, you see Abraham, he comes running into the tent like a madman, making all these demands. Hey, do this and do it quickly, right? There's a sense of urgency that Abraham's coming in here with, right? And we can see, again, Sarah's humble ability to be obedient to her husband, right, without even questioning him, right? She doesn't ask why. What's going on? What is all this going for? No, she just does it, right? She just does it. So we see that characteristic in her there as well, the ability to be obedient to her husband. Also, we can gather from the text that Abraham, as he is now called, is confident in Sarah's abilities to handle hosting such an event. Okay, he's confident in her, right? He doesn't ask her, hey, do you know how to do this? No, he knows that Sarah is well able to take care of this situation. He knows that on short-term notice that Sarah will be able to competently make this happen. Okay, so we can come to the conclusion that Sarah is a capable woman. She knows how to take care of a household. Continue reading here in verse 8, it says, and he took a butler and milk, he took butter and milk, and the calf which he had dressed, and set it before them, and he stood by them under the tree and did eat. And they said unto him, where is Sarah thy wife? And he said, behold, in the tent. Now try to picture this event that's going on, this scene that's played out here. If you try to imagine this tent that Sarah's in, it's probably made up of some sort of animal skin, some sort of fabric, something like that, okay? And these men are talking right outside this tent, okay? Safe to say, you know, these walls aren't made of wood. They're not made of drywall. She can probably hear and does hear everything that they're saying, right? There's not a word that they say that she cannot hear, okay? So now knowing that and painting that picture and seeing how this is, in verse 10 it says, and he said, I will certainly return, at verse 10, and he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life, and lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son. And Sarah heard it in the tent door, which was behind him. And now Abram and Sarah were old and well stricken in age, and it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of woman. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, After I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also. Okay. Now, from Sarah's perspective, I don't think that this laugh was meant to be a disrespectful laugh. I don't think that she was thinking, yeah, right, Lord, like this can never happen. You can't do this. I don't think that's what her intention was, okay? I don't think that's what she was going for. This laugh was more about the thought of her and Abram being so old, her being 90 years old and Abram being 100 plus years old at the time, having to care for this baby, right? Have the energy to run around and keep up after this toddler being so old. And her having the strength to carry this baby for 9 months. And she's an old woman. You know, she's having a hard time walking. She's having a hard time getting up the stairs. She's, you know, she's old, you know. Let alone keep up with that baby as it grows. You know, her doubt wasn't in the Lord. Her doubt was in her and Abram, okay? Her doubt was in her and Abram's ability. And can you blame her? You know, this has never been done in the history of mankind before. Someone this old having a child. It had never been done. She had never seen this before. Her doubt wasn't in the Lord, okay? Now, We can read here in verse 13, "And the Lord said unto Abram, Wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, Shall I surely bear a child which am old?" Now at this point, like I said, she's in this tent, she can hear everything. At this point in time, I bet Sarah's heart stopped. I bet it stopped on a dime, okay? She probably didn't mean to be heard, okay? And maybe the Lord didn't even hear it, but he just knew it, okay? He just knew that she laughed, right? I bet her heart stopped on a dime and she just kind of froze like, you weren't supposed to hear that. Have you guys ever had a time where something in your life just froze you in your tracks? Like you were just going about your daily life, you were just doing your thing, and next thing you know, you got just side smashed by some weird news or something that just caught you off guard or froze you in your tracks. I remember a time when I was in high school, there was this one night, I was in my room, my dad probably remembers this as well. I remember I was in my room at high school just minding my own business. I don't know what I was doing. I was just minding my own business, just having a good old time. Next thing I know, my dad walks into my room. And very calmly, yet very sternly, he says, "Why is there a county sheriff at our front door asking for you?" Now, you can imagine, my heart stopped. And I was just like, I bet that's how Sarah felt at this point in time. Now, that's a story for another day. But the point is here, I bet her heart stopped. You know, she got blinded, but the Lord wasn't supposed to hear her laugh, right? And the reason, you might ask, well, how do you know she felt this way? Look at verse 15. "And Sarah denied, saying, I laugh not, for she was afraid. And he said, Nay, but thou didst laugh," right? She was terrified. She knew who she was talking about. She knew who she was talking to. She was talking to the Lord, right? The God that they have followed into this new land, okay? This strange land that they'd never been. She knew who she was talking to, okay? And so, you know, I'm knowing from someone who had their heart stopped and terrified of the situation, yeah, I don't blame her for lying about the situation. But in verse 14, "Is there anything too hard for the Lord? At that time appointed, I will return unto thee according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son." That's when Sarah realized, this strength isn't coming from me. This strength isn't coming from Abraham. This energy to raise this child isn't coming from me. It's not coming from Abraham. It's coming from the Lord, right? She laughed, but if you would, luckily we have some hindsight here. We know a little bit about this story. There's some more written in the Bible about this story. Turn, if you would, over to Hebrews chapter 11. She laughed, but this is what Hebrews chapter 11 says about Sarah. Now, Hebrews chapter 11 is also known as the Hall of Faith, okay? It talks about many people in the Bible who had great faith. Hebrews 11:11. "Through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised." She judged him faithful who had promised. The laugh wasn't about God. It was about herself and her ability to do this, okay? "For there sprang there even one of him as good as dead, so many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and the sands which is by the seashore innumerable. Because she believed in God and not herself, God supplied all the needs that she was going to have while raising this child." Genesis 17, God called her the mother of nations, right? He said that kings of people shall be of her. She was rewarded because of her faith. She was rewarded because this had never been done before. This situation had never played out in humankind. And she was faithful. Why? Because she judged him faithful who promised the promise, okay? The next woman I would like to recognize here this morning is Jochebed, Moses' mother. Now, I think this is one of the most underrated women in the Bible as far as the things, the situation that she had to go through. To fully appreciate, now we know the story of Moses and how he was born, but to fully appreciate the situation Jochebed was in, I have to mention some things that took place before. In Genesis chapter 15, God told Abraham that the Israelites would be strangers in the land and afflicted for 400 years. And that's where they were at this time. When Moses was born, the Israelites were in Egypt, right? They were slaves in Egypt, okay? And they were there for 400 years. So where we pick up the story, if you turn, if you would, over to Exodus, Exodus chapter 1, where we pick up in Exodus here, a lot has happened between Genesis and Exodus, between Genesis chapter 50 and Exodus 1. A lot of time has passed, right? He said over 400 years the Israelites were here. And this is Joseph and dies in Genesis chapter 50, and we pick up in Exodus. And look here in verse 7, it says, "And the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly and multiplied and waxed exceedingly mighty, and the land was filled with them." Okay? And he said unto his people, "Behold, the children of Israel are more mightier than we." Okay, so this is Pharaoh talking here. Okay, Pharaoh's saying, these people, they've grown, they've multiplied. Now they're bigger than we are. I'm in fear that they might join with some of our enemies and they might overtake us. Okay, so Pharaoh's got to have something done. So what does Pharaoh do? Verse 11. "Wherefore did they set them taskmasters to afflict them in their burdens? And they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramses." Okay? And Pharaoh thought that plan was going to work. Pharaoh thought, hey, I'm going to keep these people so busy, I'm going to wear them out so much, that surely that's going to keep their numbers down. Surely that's going to knock them down a bit. But that didn't work, right? God continued to work and to increase and multiply the Israelites, so much so that he had to come up with another plan. Turn, if you would, a page over to verse 16. In verse 16, this is Pharaoh talking, and he said, "When ye do the office of a midwife to the Hebrew women, see them upon the stools. If it be a son, then ye shall kill him. But if it be a daughter, then she shall live." Okay? But in verse 17, "But the midwives feared God and did not as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the men and children alive." So now this is strike two. Pharaoh's had two ideas, two plans that have not worked out, right? And here we go. The children of Israel keep on increasing. They keep on multiplying, okay? And so what does that do? That makes Pharaoh angry, okay? Now he's going to take things a step more. Now he's going to take things a step further. He's mad. He will not have his plan be denied again. So what does he do in verse 21? "And Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, every son that is born, ye shall cast in the river, and every daughter ye shall save alive." Okay, he's taking this seriously, all right? He takes this further. Now he's having the Egyptians keep tabs on the Jews, right? Specifically, the Jews that are pregnant, okay? And so you can see how the time is now, okay? Not to mention that, but even further backstory, when Moses was around 80, that's when he took the Jews out of Israel, okay? He was about 80. So the Jews at this point in the story have been there, if you do the math, 480, about 320 years the Jews have been there in the land of Egypt, okay? A lot can change in such a time, right? A lot can change in that time. Like, if you look at just this day and age, in 20 years, Americans have already forgotten what terrorist Muslims are like, and now they're out protesting pro-Hamas, which is a terrorist Muslim faction here, and they're anti-Jew. In 20 years, we forgot about that. So you think a lot of things can happen over 320 years, okay? And it did, because by this time, the Jews have adopted the way of life of the Egyptians, right? They're following after their own gods. They forgot about the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. They've followed, and they're accustomed to the way of life in Egypt, okay? They're following after gods. That's why when Moses comes back to Israel to free the Jews, he performs 10 plagues. Now, we know about these 10 plagues, right? There's a twofold application to these 10 plagues, right? One was to force Pharaoh into forcing the Jews to let the Jews go. The second was an attack on the Egyptian gods, right? The Egyptian gods that the Jews were serving at that time. It was an attack to show the Jews that they weren't serving the one true God, the God of their fathers. So there's a twofold thing going on, okay? In Exodus chapter 2, verse 1 here, "And there went a man of the house of Levi, his name was Amram," doesn't say that here, but it says it in Exodus chapter 6, "and took his wife, a daughter of Levi," that we know as Jochebed, okay? Verse 2, "And the woman conceived and bare a son, and when she saw him, that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months." Okay, so like I said, with Sarah's situation, we have the hindsight to look forward, and there's more things written about it. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 23, it says that by faith, Moses' parents hid him 3 months, okay? So the first attribute that we can see about Jochebed is she was faithful and served God when not many did, right? The Jews had all but forgotten God and had followed after Egypt, okay? So that's the first thing we can see about Jochebed, is she's faithful and she served God. She was faithful in hiding Moses. Now, before we go any further, let's just try to put ourselves in her shoes for a moment, okay? She's pregnant. I'm sure her and Amram prayed so hard for a baby girl, right? If she just has a baby girl, none of these problems happen. She can raise this child, she can nurse this child, watch it grow into a young woman, and there will be no problems, right? I guarantee you, her and her husband sat down and prayed for a baby girl, right? The whole time she was pregnant, I guarantee it, okay? But just like any other parents, they had to come to the realization that what if it's a boy, right? They had to have that awful talk while she was pregnant, right? What if it's a boy? What are we going to do? How are we going to save this child? Are we going to do what Pharaoh says? What's the pros and cons here? What are we going to do with this child? I'm sure they had witnessed many baby boys being ripped out of homes right from their mother's womb and thrown into the river. What a horrible thing to witness, right? And so you can see at this time, this is her reality. This is the world that she was living in. The chances of her having a boy and some Egyptian guard coming in, ripping that child right away from her, right away, and throwing it in the river and drowning it. This is the world she lived in. She lived in a world of fear and uncertainty. Like I said, I assume, like most parents would, I'm sure they discussed. They had a purpose in their heart. If it was a boy, that they were going to keep it. If it was a boy, they had to rely on God. So when Moses was born, this decision to rely on God, I think, was already made. But man, what a burden. What a burden it was. You know, if the Egyptians found out that they were hiding this baby, who knows what Pharaoh might have done. If Pharaoh's willing to take a newborn baby away from a mother and throw it in a river, what kind of cruel things would he do for a woman who's hiding that baby, right? Man, what a burden on that family. He might have just slayed the whole family, just said, get rid of them all. Who needs them? You know, if he's willing to do something so maniacal and twisted as that, you know, but the moment she laid eyes on that baby, the love she had for Moses, she knew at that point in time she was willing to do whatever it take to give that boy a chance, right? She knew she was going to do whatever it took to give her little boy a chance. Now, I don't know how you can conceal a baby for 3 months and how they went about doing that, but I bet those were the longest 3 months of their lives after that baby was born. I bet that was the most stressful, longest 3 months that they had ever lived. You know, people knew she was pregnant, right? They had to have. What did they tell their friends? When their friends or people were asking, how's Jochebed doing? How's the baby doing? What's the gender of the baby? Are you guys safe? You know, the questions had to be asked. For 3 months, they hid this baby. You know, people must have started asking questions. I mean, just imagine being Jochebed, not knowing if but when someone was going to enter their house and take that baby away from them. It was not a matter of if, it was a matter of when. They were going to come in and take that baby. Something had to be done. They both knew they couldn't raise that baby. There was no chance for them to raise that baby. There was no chance. Now, I know I'm assuming a lot of things about this story, but I don't think it's so far-fetched that this thought of someone coming in and taking this baby consumed those parents. I don't think that there was any doubt in my mind that that thought didn't consume them night and day, that they didn't pray and weep over this child several nights they was alive, right? The next thing we find out about Jochebed here is in verse 3. And when she could no longer hide him, she took him for an ark. She took him an ark of bulrushes and dabbed it with slime and with pitch and put the child therein, and she laid it in the flags in the river brink. Okay, so she's crafty, right? She makes this little ark for Moses, and she puts the slime on it to make it float. So she's crafty. But not just that, no one really talks about the strength of Jochebed, right? No one really talks about the strength of Jochebed. That's one of her best attributes, in my opinion. The fact of she's going through this extreme situation, right? This most extreme situation, but she was able to keep a clear head and make tough decisions while taking care of not only her family, not only her baby, but then she had to worry about all the rest of the stuff with the Egyptians, you know? Most women nowadays, most women in America right now would fold up under that kind of pressure, right? I'm not saying people in this room, I'm saying outside of this building, most people would have folded. Most people would have gave that baby away and not thought twice about it, right? most of them would have folded under pressure, and not a lifetime of therapy or Xanax could help them ever recover from the trauma that Jochebed was going through, right? But not Jochebed. Jochebed was strong. She was taking care of this baby, she was caring for her family, and she was making tough decisions, right? Imagine putting your baby in a river, right? Imagine sending that baby down the river. You have to be strong to make that decision. You got to be tough. You got to be tough as nails. You talk about a leap of faith. You know, once that baby's in the water, it's in God's hands, right? She comes up with a great plan. Don't get me wrong. The plan is spotless. You know, it's a great plan. But man, once that baby hits the water, it's all on God. It's all in God's hands. What a leap of faith that was, you know? You talk about putting it all on God. You talk about surrendering all. That's surrendering all right there. Verse 4. And his sister stood afar off, to wit, what would be done with him. And the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river, and her maidens walked alongside by the riverside. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maids to fetch it. And when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the babe wept, and she had compassion on him, and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then said his sister, this is Moses' sister, to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee?" Okay, so this was the plan all along. Miriam was a maid of the Egyptian daughter here, of Pharaoh's daughter. She was a maid of her. This was a plan all along, okay? And boy, did she ever have a person that she was going to bring to Pharaoh's daughter, right? Boy, did she ever have someone ready. Hey, I got somebody. I know someone who can help with this situation, right? I know I got someone who can help. And boy, God truly blessed her. Look at verse 8 here. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, "Go," and the maiden went and called her the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, "Take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages." And the woman took the child and nursed it. Man, did God bless her. Looking at this story, God truly blessed this woman. Not only did she get to nurse this baby, right, but she got paid for it, right? This is something that she just would have done on, you know, just because she loved that baby. No need for payment, but God blessed her because of her faith. Right? God blessed her because some of her faith. Now, moving on in this story, there's a big jump in time between verses 10 and 11, and there's a lot we don't know about Moses growing up. Okay, there's a lot of things we don't know. But there are some things that we do know. Moses knew that he was a Jew, right? And he knew that he wanted to be a part of the Jews, and he rejected the Egyptian way. Okay? When God called him, when he ran away after he slew the Egyptian soldier, when God called him out of the burning bush, he knew it was the Lord. And he knew the proper way to respond by covering his face. He knew God, right? And so when God, he knew Aaron, when God brought Aaron into the equation, he knew Miriam. So I don't think it's as far-fetched to think that Jochebed might have played a bigger part in this in Moses' life than we know, than what the Bible tells us. I think it's very possible. How would he know of God? How would he know to cover his face? How would he know about Aaron and his sister? How would he know about them? I think Jochebed got to play a very important part in this boy's life. I don't think it's so far-fetched to think that. Moving on to the last one. The last one I want to mention here today before we close is Hannah, the mother of Samuel. Turn, if you would, to 1 Samuel. And as we all know of Hannah wanted to be a mother. She wanted to have a baby boy above anything else, right? But in verse 5 here, in chapter 1 and verse 5, it says, "But unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion, for he loved Hannah, but the Lord had shut up her womb." But unfortunately, Hannah was unable to bear a child, okay? And this made her upset. She grieved. This is the one thing that she wanted. More than anything in the world, she wanted to be a mother. So much so that in verse 8 here, Elkanah, her husband, asks a silly question here, to which, don't ask a question if you don't want the answer, right? "Then said Elkanah, her husband, to her, Hannah, why weepest thou? Why eatest thou not? Why is thy heart grieved? Am I not better to thee than 10 sons?" And don't ask the question if you don't want the answer, right? Don't ask the question, because that's clearly a no. That's clearly a no, okay? The inability to bear a child left her in bitterness of soul, and she wept for days and days about this, like it says in verse 10. But Hannah, She knew where to turn. She knew who to turn to, right? The best thing a mother can do for a child when in time of need is pray for them. And that's exactly what she did in verse 11. She pours out her heart to the Lord. In verse 11 it says, "And she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look on the afflictions of thine handmaid and remember me and not forget thine handmaid, but will give unto thine handmaid a man-child, then I will give him unto the Lord all the days of his life, and there shall no razor come upon his head." She prayed and she vowed a vow to the Lord and she poured out her heart to God, and God heard her. God heard her prayer. In verse 20, it says, "Wherefore it came to pass, when the time was come about after Hannah had conceived, that she bare a son and called his name Samuel, saying, Because I have asked him of the Lord." God rewarded her faith. She stayed faithful. She couldn't have a kid and she couldn't have a child, and she stayed faithful to the Lord. She served him. She knew where to turn in her troubles. And she kept her word. In verse 27, it says, "For this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my petition, which I asked of him. Therefore also I have lent him to the Lord as long as he liveth. He shall be lent to the Lord, and he worshiped the Lord there." Okay? The Lord rewarded her. But the one thing that really stands out about Hannah is what follows in chapter 2 here. In verse 2 and verse 1, it says Hannah prayed. Okay? And she says a lot of things. There's a lot of things that she says in this prayer. This prayer contains a lot of doctrinal truth about the second coming of Jesus Christ. That tells me, when you read verse 8 and it says, "And he raised up the poor out of the dust and lifted up the beggar from the dunghill to set them among the princes and to make them inherit the throne of glory. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he has sent the world upon them." Verse 10, "And the adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Out of heaven shall he thunder upon them, and the Lord shall judge the ends of the earth, and he shall give strength unto his king and exalt the horn of his anointed." This woman knew the Lord. This woman had a relationship, had a spiritual relationship with Jesus Christ. She knew him. She knew him, and God blessed her for that. Look, if you would, over in verse 19 of chapter 2 here. "Moreover, his mother made him a little coat and brought it to him from year to year when she came up with her husband to offer a yearly sacrifice." Every year, she came up to offer that sacrifice. She brought her son something. She brought her son a coat. Verse 20, "Now Eli blessed Elkanah and his wife and said, The Lord give thee seed of this woman for the loan which is lent of the Lord. And they went up unto their own home, and the Lord visited Hannah, so that she conceived and bare three sons and two daughters. And the child Samuel grew before the Lord." Now, I bet if you asked Hannah here, like, did the Lord bless you? He blessed you more than she could ever imagine. More than she could have ever imagined. All three of these women, they have different issues going on, right? Different issues about, in terms of being a mother. You know, Sarah was old. Jochebed hid Moses for 3 months. Hannah couldn't bear children, right? But all these women knew who to put their faith in. All of these women knew who to turn to in their biggest time of need. Hebrews chapter 11, like I talked about, is the hall of faith, okay? In the beginning of the chapter, the definition of faith is the substance of all things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, okay? In each one of these situations, these women put their faith in God. They couldn't tell what the future held in these situations. They just had to trust that God was going to take care of it. They put all of their faith, all of their marbles on God. Now, there's no way they could have known in hindsight what these babies would turn into, right? There's no way they could have ever known. Isaac displayed this same great faith when Abraham took him to be sacrificed, right? He trusted that the Lord knew what he was doing, that Abraham knew what he was doing. Moses, you talk about a man who led Israel out of Egypt. One man led an entire nation out of slavery and poverty into a land that God promised them. You talk about a man of faith. You're talking about Samuel. Samuel became the prophet in Israel, anointed the first king of Israel, anointed David, right? These men went on to do imaginable things. The Lord blessed these women, right? And the one thing that they would say is, man, I never expected that. I never expected that. Now, here in America today, we like to monetize every holiday. You know, gifts for every season, every occasion, right? And there is nothing wrong with getting your mother a gift this Mother's Day. There's nothing wrong with that. But the best way that you can honor a faithful mother is by putting your trust in the same God she has. There is no other way you can honor her, right? It's such a great way, right? These women, these men that I'm talking about, Moses and Isaac, they honored their mothers by having the same faith that their mother taught them, right? I'll close with this. Turn, if you would, over to Proverbs 23 real quick. Pick up in verse 22. Hearken unto thy father that begat thee, and despise not thy mother when she is old. Buy the truth and sell it not, all wisdom and instruction and understanding. The father of righteousness shall greatly rejoice, and he that begetteth a wise child shall have joy of him. Thy father and thy mother shall be glad, and she that bare thee shall rejoice. If you want to make your mom rejoice, accept the same Savior that she accepted, right? If you have a mother here today and she's saved by the blood of Jesus Christ, there is nothing you can do that would bring more joy to your mom than to accept the same Savior she has. There is nothing you can do. There is nothing you can do if you have a mother who serves God. There is nothing you could do that would make her more happy, more rejoiceful than to serve the same God she serves. There is nothing you can do. There is nothing you can do that would make your mother more happy. God rewards those who are faithful to him, right? God rewards those who are faithful to him. Like it was said about Sarah in Hebrews 11, right? She counted him faithful. He's always been faithful to us. The Lord has always been faithful to us. Always. Maybe it's time we should start being faithful to him. And with that, we'll close. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, thank you for your words. Thank you for the example that these women have showed, Lord, about that extreme faith, Lord. And I just pray that you would help us to have that same faith in you, Lord. I pray that today that we would honor our mothers and honor you, Lord, by doing so. In Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen.